everybody. Welcome to the Smart Women Publish podcast. I'm your host, Bev Ryan. I'm the author of the book Smart Women Publish, and I provide book coaching and publishing services for smart women who want to write and publish nonfiction books that have an impact in the world. Today, I'm really thrilled to have a chat with Dr. Lois Frankel. Now, many of you will have heard of Lois. She's the president of Corporate Coaching International, which is a company that is a recognised leader in the field of executive development. And probably what we all have heard about is the fact that she's also a best-selling author, executive coach, and an internationally recognised expert in the field of leadership development for women. So I'm thrilled to have you. Thanks, Lois.
Thanks for having me back, Bev. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, we've spoken a few times, haven't we? We've actually run an event together. I've run a book launch in Brisbane where we were just so excited to have you as our guest speaker, which was pretty cool.
It was great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. That was a little while ago now, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a really good night. I'll do a quick summary of some of the books that people would have heard, just so they can put some context around your name. You've authored three New York Times best-selling books, Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, Nice Girls Don't Get Rich, and Nice Girls Just Don't Get It. So there's a bit of a theme there. I'd be really interested how that all came about, how the Nice Girls theme came about. So would you like to tell us that story?
Sure, and I should just mention, and the latest is Nice Girls Don't Speak Up or Stand Out, which I actually had a different title for, but they wanted to keep the Nice Girls brand. Mm-hmm. And so they convinced me, let's keep this a Nice Girls book, but I'll get into that later.
Sure.
I started writing the Nice Girls series of books, and the first book was also, I had a different title for, and I was calling it Quit Being a Girl, because that's what I would tell my women clients when they would do things that were so stereotypically feminine. I'd say, quit being a girl. You know, you've got to be a woman. You can't act like the nice little girl you were taught to be in childhood and expect to achieve your adult goals. And so those girly behaviors were things like, you know, always letting men go first, or, you know, not speaking too loudly, not asking for what you really want, just taking what you think you can get, asking permission, using too many words. All those things were things that I saw women doing. So that's why I wrote the first book called Quit Being a Girl, and the publishers, Hachette, changed the title to Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. And I said, you realize I'm going to spend the rest of my life answering the question, can you not be nice and get what you want? And pretty much it's been true. That's what everybody asks me. Yes. You know, is that what I'm saying? And that's not what I'm saying at all. You know, the books are really about, how do you embrace your femininity? In other words, how do you continue being a woman, but not the little girl you were taught to be in childhood? How do you move away from some of those messages you got in childhood and start embracing more adult women behaviors? And that's what really the theme across all four books is that you can't achieve your adult goals by behaving according to the rules you were taught in childhood were appropriate for little girls.
Mm, definitely. I'm listening to your audiobook at the moment and just thinking, gosh, is there still room out there to, because you've been, just backtracking a little, when did your first book come out, Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office?
I think that was like 2015 or 16. I'm sorry, 2005 or six. Sorry.
Yeah, that's, I was doing my math then. That was longer than that. Okay, so that's what, 15 years ago. Yeah. So, and I know, you know, there's a lot of people working in the women in leadership space. So, in all the work that you're doing, are you still seeing a need today for the same messaging? Obviously, maybe to a new generation of women, I guess, coming through.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I do, because, you know, lots of times people say, yeah, but haven't we really come a long way? And I always say, we've come a way. I'm not going to say we've come a long way, because the fact is if we came a long way, we would see more women at the helm of corporations. We'd see more women in charge of countries, right? We'd see more women, you know, you at least have had a woman Prime Minister, Julia Gillard. Here in the United States, we haven't even gotten that far.
Right.
And so the fact is if there was equity, we would no longer even be having to count how many women we have in companies, at the heads of companies, on boards of directors, things like that. We wouldn't even be focusing on that. And we still are. And one of the reasons we still are is because when, you know, Susan Faludi wrote about it, I'm sure you know this book, Backlash, and that when women take two steps forward, the system acts in ways to put them back in their place. And that's the backlash. And so for every two steps we take forward, we move one back. And sometimes we don't even know how that happened to us. And we blame it on ourselves, like, you know, maybe I was too aggressive, or I shouldn't have said this, or, you know, that's one of the things women find all the time when they get performance reviews, is they're told they're too pushy or bossy or too aggressive, when in fact they rarely are.
Yes. Yeah, and it's very easy to for women to question themselves, isn't it?
It is, you know, and then what winds up happening is you wind up doubting everything that you do then. And how can we really run a race flat out, right? How can we really run our best race when we're doubting where we're putting our feet? We're going to lose the race that way. So we really do need to really step up to the plate with confidence and really understand and really get when we're being called names or things are happening to us, not because we're doing anything wrong, but because we're doing everything right.
Mm. So with the work that you're doing, I just want to clarify that you still are president. Oh, you've got a business, president of Corporate Coaching International. I think what happens when we begin to see somebody's name as author, we forget that they're still running a business of some shape or form. In the work I do, most women I work with are business owners or professionals, and I always caution that you won't make a lot of money from the book, but the book hopefully will help you grow your business, grow your profile, that sort of thing. So I think it is important to remember that even someone like you who's built a very visible career as an author, you're still running a business. Is that right?
I am still running a business. excuse me. The thing that really worked for me was it helped me change my focus, though. And you're right. Most people aren't going to get rich just off of a book. But the book can help you get rich in other ways. So let me just give you an example. You know, I always had my business, Corporate Coaching International, and the book is based on my coaching experiences. And I thought when the book came out that I would get more coaching engagement so that it would help me build my business. But that wasn't what happened. What happened was I got invited to speak to more women's groups and in corporations and do more training, things like that, women's conferences. And that's where I made my money. That it was kind of an unintended consequence, I think, of the book. It wasn't why I wrote the book, but it had a consequence that I didn't expect, but was very welcome, obviously. Now, once Corner Office made the bestseller lists, of course, I am still making a significant amount of money off it. Some years, it's probably more than most people would earn in a year. But that is very unusual because that's just for Corner Office. Don't forget, I've written 10 books, and most of them I see very modest royalties on. So I think people need to think about, A, why you're writing the book. And what I tell people is that, you know, if you want to write a book, it has to be because you have something that it's so important for you to say that if you don't say it, you'll feel thwarted. You'll be frustrated. You'll feel as if a part of your life isn't complete. That's why you have to write a book. And the other thing is, I wrote Corner Office at night and on weekends. I didn't have time during the day when I'm running my business and trying to earn a living to write a book. So most of it was written between 8 o'clock at night and midnight. And on weekends. So that's the other thing is think about, when are you going to write the book? And then the third thing I guess to think about is, and what do you want to do with it? Like I said, for me, it was, first of all, I had to say it. And I thought, well, a nice byproduct would be I'd get more coaching clients. And I was so confident I was going to get more coaching clients that I took a bigger office. After it hit the bestseller list, it was like, oh, I took a bigger office. We're going to need more space here. No, I didn't need any more space because I was gone more doing the keynotes and the other things. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I hope it's okay to ask these questions. So that coaching business that came, well, those invitations for you to speak, they came back to you individually rather than back to the company. So you kind of, from a business point of view, you separated, like you started trading under or working under the name Dr. Lois Frankel, or raised your profile in that name, under that name, while the business ran separately.
Yeah, that's a good point. Dr. Lois Frankel became a brand.
Yes. Okay.
And Corporate Coaching International, most people, when they see me, I don't think they think Corporate Coaching International. And as a matter of fact, it's something that I think everyone listening to this, whether you intend to write a book or not, should remember. I remember somebody giving me feedback that saying, you know, people don't hire Corporate Coaching International. They hire Lois Frankel.
Yes.
And it's one of the reasons why people should name their businesses their name. I named my business over 30 years ago. If I had to do it again today, you know, I'd probably name it something like Dr. Lois Frankel Associates or something like that. Because people buy people. They don't necessarily buy a business unless you're Xerox or Coca-Cola or something like that.
Yeah. And I don't think that's ever going to change, you know, the work that we do, that you do. Thank goodness. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah. And even if you start your business just by yourself and you don't have any associates, think big. When I named my company Corporate Coaching International, I didn't have any international business, but it was my goal to have it. So it was like a stretch goal that I put right there in the name. The same thing, if you're going to name your business by your name, you know, call it your name and associates or, you know, the Lois Frankel Company or whatever, because it leaves you room to grow. And even though I had all these other people working for me, when a client would want to refer someone to my business, they'd say, call Lois Frankel's outfit. Right. So it's another reason that you name your company your name.
Yeah. Nice. So that first book then went on to, you know, do lots of things. And that's wonderful. It's still selling really, really well. Just again, one more question for our listeners. Did you acquire the publishing contract? Did you chase them or did they chase you the early days?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that full question. Okay. Did they do what or did I do what?
The publishing company, was it Hachette that you were with?
Yeah, Hachette. Yeah, it was originally Time Warner Books, yes.
Right. So they came to you and offered you?
Oh no, I went to them. I got a literary agent. And anybody interested in getting a literary agent, I'm not exactly sure how it would work in Australia, but here in the United States, there's an annual book that comes out, and it's like a handbook or a list of literary agents, and it comes out every year. Very thick book filled with literary agents, their names, who do they represent, and so on and so forth. And so I'm assuming there's something similar available in Australia. So I went through the book, basically, and I picked out 10 people I thought could represent me well. And of those 10, only one took me on. But he was the right one.
Yeah.
And he sold my book to, at the time, Time Warner Books. And then Hachette bought Time Warner Books.
Oh, nice.
Right. And so the second book, they came to me.
Yes.
And they said, okay, we've got, you know, Corner Office is on all the bestseller lists. We want you to write another book. We want you to write a book about money. And I said, yeah, but I, you know, I'm not a financial planner. I can't write a book about money. They said, no, not about financial planning, just about women and their relationship with money. And I still thought, you know, can I really do this? And because I was thinking like a girl, right? Somebody's offering you money to write a book. And I'm saying, oh, can I really do this? So, you know, I talked to my agent. And he said, Lois, you could do this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got that contract. And then I wrote that book because they came to me.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah. And it's all about that saying yes, isn't it? Like having the belief. Yeah. You may not know how to do it, but you know you can do it.
You know what? And that's the whole thing about women is we've got to be able to say to ourselves, I may not have done it before, but I can figure it out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what confidence is, isn't it?
Yes. And how we all have a network of people who, you know, have the resources or the knowledge that we seek. Mm-hmm. So it's quite doable. Now that's fantastic. So moving then to today, what I'm really interested to talk about is your latest book. So I'll let you explain more about that.
Yes. Yeah, you know, the one question that people ask me most is, how do I say this or that, right? Or how do I negotiate for this? Or how do I tell my boss this? Or it's always about communication. And it's the question that I'm asked most about, how do I handle some communication? And I realize, you know, and people ask me for books. They would say, are there any books that could help me communicate better? And I couldn't come up with any. You know, there are books that are about communication, but they weren't as prescriptive as I tend to like in a book. And, you know, anybody who's read my books know that they're very prescriptive. They don't just, you know, lay out a theory, but they're rather, hey, here's a problem and here's how you solve it, because that's my MO. It's like, you know, if there's a problem, I want to solve it, period. Mm-hmm. So I pitched a book about communication to Hachette, and they said, okay, great. And I started writing it, and I realized, you know what, this doesn't work. This isn't translating. What I want to say doesn't translate to the page. You have to be able to hear it. So I went back to them and I said, do you ever do just audiobooks? Like, I don't know anybody who just has an audiobook, but it's not in print. And they said, you know, that's becoming more popular. We haven't done that yet, but if you'd like to give it a try, we'd like to. And I said, yeah, I would really like this to be an audiobook, not a book in print. And so we switched the contract around a little bit. And I was calling the book The Nice Girl's Guide to Telling People to Go to Hell So They Look Forward to the Trip. Because that's what I always tell people. You know, I always tell women, you know, we can't say things the way men can. We have to always kind of spruce it up so that people look forward to the trip when we tell them to go to hell. So that was what my working title was. And that was what they bought it as. Mm-hmm. And I basically had to write the book in order to be able to read it. But once I realized I was going to be reading it, it took like an entirely different, took on a different life. Because, you know, if you think about it, when people are reading it, you have to be so careful about every single word. But when you know that you're going to be saying it, they can hear the inflections in your voice and the tone, and that describes it. And you don't need the word to describe it in that way. Mm-hmm. And so it just really, the words like flew out of me once I got that. And when I went in to read it, it was really pretty exciting for me because I realized that I was really helping people to develop the skills that they need in almost any situation to say what's on their minds.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been listening to it at recently, and totally understand why it's so much more effective when I hear you. I hear the tone of your voice, which is going to teach me or model for me so much more effectively than if I was just reading the words on a page, because you're just not getting that, are you?
Yeah, you're just not. Like, you know, and for example, if you've just started listening, you know, in the very beginning of the book, I have the tools I think every woman needs in her toolkit to start to communicate effectively. And one of those things is contrasting, and it's saying what you do want, you don't want. Well, I can write that on a page, but what does that really mean? But when you hear me say, you know, Bev, I don't want you to think I'm not grateful to you for everything you've done for me, because I am. At the same time, I do need to come back and ask you for a few more things. Mm. You know, when you're afraid to ask for something because someone's already been so good to you, and yet you don't quite have what you want, that's what it sounds like. But to just write it down, to say, well, contrast what you do with what you don't want. It's so different, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, no, it's such a valuable resource. I think it's just a resource that everybody could use. And there's so much to learn from. I'm not very far into the book. I think I've just finished chapter one, and I'm already just taking notes and thinking, oh, my God, that's how you do it. It's so effective.
And, you know, also, Bev, another reason why I did an audiobook is because what I realized when I was talking to my clients, they don't read as much.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
When I started my business 30 years ago, you know, I would routinely give my clients books and say, okay, you need to read this one, you need to read this one. And they would read them and we would have discussions. And then I started realizing I'm giving them these books, but they're not reading them. And then I think, okay, nobody has time for books. Let me start giving them some articles. I'd give articles and they wouldn't read those either, even though they were shorter. Mm-hmm. And then I realized what everybody's doing is they're in their cars, they're at the gym. They, you know, they've got something in their ear.
Yes.
So an audiobook then becomes transportable in many ways too.
Mm. Yeah, such a valuable resource. So do you think I'm assuming now that you've explained that this latest book won't ever appear in print?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that I just got a call from Hachette last week that said, Lois, we're going to put out an ebook in time for graduation. So an ebook will be out, they said, April 28th. And I haven't yet seen how they're going to do that. And you know, and that's a contractual thing also. When we renew, and I think it's because you have an audience of authors, I think it's important to talk about the business aspect too. When we were negotiating for my advance, they gave me less of an advance because they said, well, you don't have to write a whole book. And I thought, well, I do have to write a whole book.
Well, actually, you do. Yes.
Yeah, because I got to read it. But, you know, I kind of went with the program and I thought, you know, I understand what they're saying. Mm. So now that they want to put it out in ebook, it's like, well, that's on you because you didn't ask me to write a book. So that I'll probably need, if they want me to work on the ebook at all, it's probably going to be another negotiation.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, that's a funny. What did they think you were going to do? Just make it up as you go. That's
well, funny. I know. I don't know what they thought, but it was like, and I remember saying to my agent, you know, wait, I do have to write the whole book. And I did have to write it, but you know what? The fact is it wasn't the same as writing a book that I was going to deliver in writing.
Yeah.
Because I could have typos, I could have all kinds of things, I could have notes to myself, and
sure.
It was easier in that regard, but it still was time consuming.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I noticed on your website that you've included some extras. So if somebody buys your audiobook, what extras do they get?
Yeah, if they buy the CD, mm-hmm. Of Nice Girls Don't Speak Up or Stand Out, there is a CD in there that has what's called bonus materials. And then if they download it, I tell them, if you go to my website, you'll get the bonus materials. And the bonus materials are things like charts and models that I refer to, because sometimes you do need to see those things. Like when I talk about the model of conscious competence, what does that really mean? I can explain it to you, but that one makes more sense if you can see it. So I wanted to provide that, and those are on my website. And then I realized, you know, some people might like a workbook to go along with this. So I put together a workbook that I'm calling a companion workbook. And when people buy either the CD or they upload it, I tell them, if you'll just write to me, I'll send you a free companion workbook. Because I just have it on a PDF and I'm happy to send it to you for free. So that's another thing people can get through my website is just write to me through my website and I'll send a free companion workbook. I don't remember if I gave you one, Bev.
No, I think I've just got the audiobook. So yeah, I'd be really interested in seeing that. So from, I guess, keeping in mind again, our listeners are thinking about publishing. An audiobook is, I guess that's, don't make the mistake of thinking if you're doing an audiobook that you don't have to write the book, because obviously you have to write the content. You recorded it to yourself, didn't you?
Well, I read it myself. I didn't record it myself. technically, yes. I went into a studio that was engaged by Hachette with a technician mm-hmm. there, and I read the book myself, yes.
Right. So how long did that take?
Oh, it took a good 3 days because mm-hmm. the book is about 10 hours long. Mm-hmm. So it took a good 3 days to record the book.
Do you make glitches like everybody else? Did you make mistakes that they had to edit out like everybody else would think that they would do? Or are you?
Oh, yeah. Because I'm in a studio, the mistakes are caught right in the moment. So, and because I am reading from a script, essentially, like many readers, or at least like me, sometimes I'm reading something and I make something up as I go along, and the technician would stop me and say, you know, Lois, the script says this, you said this, is that what you meant to say? And sometimes I would have misspoken. And other times, I really was just ad-libbing.
Right.
So, and because I'm the author, it didn't matter that I ad-libbed.
Yes.
Right? If I was I was reading someone else's work, it would matter. But, you know, sometimes I'd read it and I think, you know, it would sound better if I said this. So I would just change some words here or there. Or there were times when I would just garble words, and I would know as soon as I said it that, oh, that sounded bad. And I'd say, you know, let's go back and let's do that again. Mm. So between the technician and for me, which I had already read four of my books.
Okay.
So I had some experience, and I knew how it should sound and what I needed to do. And, you know, I learned from those other experiences.
Right. So which other books have you converted to audiobooks as well?
Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, Nice Girls Don't Get Rich, See Jane Lead, and Nice Girls Just Don't Get It.
Right. Okay. I didn't realize you'd done that as well. So with Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, was there a gap of a few years before you did the audio version? There would have been, I guess.
I think there was. I think... You know, it was so long ago now, to tell you the truth. It was probably about a year, maybe, because I think they wait to see. At the time, don't forget, audiobooks weren't as big.
Yes.
So I think they waited to see what the book was going to do. And then when it really took off, they probably had me read it. Yeah.
Mm. Right. Yeah. I'm going to throw a question in here, which I haven't pre-warned you about, but I'm just wondering, have you ever relaunched a book in any way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two books. At least two books. So, you know, one of my very first books was not published by Hachette. It was published by Random House, and it was called Overcoming Your Strengths. And it was a book for both men and women about the mistakes. I think it was called Overcoming Your Strengths, 8 Strategies to Prevent Career Derailment or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it did fairly well, but it didn't do great. And then when Corner Office came out, I took that book back to Hachette. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'd like you to launch this one now. And so they bought the rights from Random House, and they put it out under the title, I think it was Stop Sabotaging Your Career.
Yeah, oh, that one, yes.
Yeah, so they put that one out then. So then I had another, in addition to Nice Girls Don't Get Rich, I had Stop Sabotaging Your Career come out that same year. Because that was part of the deal. If you wanted me to do Nice Girls Don't Get Rich, I also want Stop Sabotaging Your Career. And since that was mostly written, you know, I just needed to make a few changes. Now, if you're going to relaunch a book here in the U.S., you need to make it 30% different. There has to be either 30% new material or 30% different. So there was probably 10 years in between when that one came out and when it was relaunched. So there was enough different that I could change. And mm-hmm. then for Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, at the 10-year mark, I went back to Hachette and I said, how about a 10th anniversary edition? Mm-hmm. And they said, because it was still selling well, and it still is selling well. So they said, okay, you need 30% different. So I actually added 30% new material because there were things 10 years later that I was thinking about and that I had learned that I hadn't thought about 10 years previously.
Sure. Oh, brilliant. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of things like social media, 10 years previously, it wasn't as prevalent. So I didn't include anything about, you know, how to handle social media. 10 years previously, I didn't have the courage to talk about what it meant to be a person of color working in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And because I talked to so many people on my speaking tours that were people of color, they really encouraged me to include things for them too. So I did. So it has 30% new material.
Yeah, fantastic. That's good to know. So when you say there's, and I don't know if it's a law or expectation, there has to be 30% new material, is that a publisher that will, like, is that their rule? I was wondering where that rule comes from.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure where the rule comes from. Mm. I just remember them telling me, if you're going to release another book, it has to be 30% new material.
Mm. It's probably a good industry guide, I guess, if nothing else.
It may be just an industry guide or a rule of thumb, because I haven't seen it written anywhere. No. But it kind of makes sense, doesn't
yes.
it?
You
because
don't.
Otherwise people may be buying the same book and say, oh, you know, I already bought this.
That's right.
Yeah. Under a different title, particularly if it's under a different title.
Definitely. No, that's good to know. Okay, so I believe you're coming to Australia sometime this year.
I am. You know, just before you and I started talking, there was a contract. I didn't have the time to look at it entirely. But I believe it's going to be the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be doing work with Business Chicks. And you know that they're one of my favorite groups, in addition to you, of course.
I'm a group of one.
Yeah. Well, you put together your own groups, though, that I've spoken to. But they're one of my favorite formal groups for women in Australia. So I'll probably be speaking in Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney would be my guess. Again, I didn't look at it that closely. Somebody else was organizing it for me.
Sure.
And so, you know, if any of your listeners have groups or companies that they'd like to have me speak to, just visit me at my website.
Mm. Well, I'm talking to my people, which is me, talking to your people at the moment. So you never know what we can pull together. That would be awesome.
Business great.
Chicks, yeah, Business Chicks do amazing, you know, amazing things. They do some great work, don't they?
They really do. And for any woman who's not familiar with it, it's a really dynamic group of women that get together on a regular basis, and they have superb speakers. They've had Richard Branson. I think they've had Sheryl Sandberg.
Yes. So they
have really great speakers come in, and, you know, networking is important, and it's a great way to network.
Mm. Which goes back to where you and I met. I'll just share this little story with the readers. I went to the Gold Coast to hear you speak at an event, and I went because you were speaking. And at that time, I was publishing my magazine, Honestly Woman, and I took a copy with me, and I did what you encourage women to do, and I had the courage to stand up and just hand you a copy as you kind of walked off stage out to the door and just spoke to you very briefly. And that's really how we met. So it's just a testament to, you know, that standing up, speaking out, having the courage to do what your heart's telling you that you would love to do. And we made that connection so briefly, but then you followed up, which was very gracious of you, which was lovely.
Hmm. Yeah, I really do encourage people to do that. There's one woman now that I was walking through a lobby one day on my way to do a conference, and this woman came up to me and she said, "Are you Dr. Lois Frankel?" I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "You know, I've read all of your books." And I said, "You know what? I am really hungry. Do you want to go get something to eat?"
No.
And we sat down and we had a meal together, and we've stayed in touch ever since. So it's true. You know, don't hold yourself back from speaking to the people that you either have questions for, or maybe you admire, or you know what? Everyone's human. And if they don't treat you like another human being, there's something wrong with them, not with you.
Mm. Yeah. And I imagine the life of international speaking, sometimes it's a very solitary occupation, I'd imagine. So to make a real live human connection like that over dinner would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes the solitary is good, other times it's not.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, so when you're coming to Australia then, are you coming to promote your audiobook, your book, Nice Girls Don't Speak Up or Stand Out? Is that kind of the connection? Yes.
Yeah, that's the connection. At least that's the topic that I'll be addressing in each of those cities, Nice Girls Don't Speak Up and Stand Out. And also, one of the reasons we're doing this is because we're doing what we're calling the Last Call, Dr. Lois Frankel Tour. This will be the last year that I'm going to be doing public speaking.
Right.
I have some other things that I want to do with my life, and it's time for me to start focusing on those things. And one of those things is helping women get elected to public office. So I want to...
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, here in this country, it's really, really important. I think it's probably important in your country too.
Yes.
And so I want to help, I want to coach women how to communicate in ways that will help them to get elected to public office. Because feel strongly that if we don't have more women running our towns and our states and our countries and the world, we're in a heap of trouble.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know. That's new information for me. That's fantastic. I mean, I follow on Instagram, I follow Elizabeth Warren, and just because I like the woman, you know, she's politically, it's got nothing, well, what I say, it's got nothing to do with me. It has, because what happens in America impacts Australia hugely. But I just so admire the courage and the energy this woman has to go out and talk to people at a grassroots level. She's doing great work.
She really does, doesn't she? And unfortunately, she's not going to win the nomination. I will bet my dog on it. And everybody knows how much I love my dog. But I'll bet my dog on it that she's not going to win the nomination. And part of that is sexism. Yes. And I think another part of it is communication. Somebody asked me the other day, if I was coaching her, what would I coach her to do differently? And the very things that people love with her, love about her, as in most of our cases, our strengths can become our liabilities. And they love that she's down to earth and energetic and, you know, filled with good ideas. But some people see those ideas as not realistic. And see her as maybe a little bit overcarbonated sometimes for a president.
Yes.
So anyway, so that's what I intend to do. But yeah, I like her too. She just, she's the kind of person you'd like to sit down and have a cup of coffee with, isn't she?
Well, yeah, I just admire the fact she's out there doing something very energetically about something she believes in so strongly. So you have to, and seems to be doing it very honestly. I think that's the important part, isn't it? The honesty and integrity.
Yeah, she seems genuine.
Yes, we do. We Australians do know what's going on in America. It's pretty scary at times.
Yeah.
Like, oh, seriously?
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, look, it's been wonderful to talk to you, and I'm sure that we'll see each other in June in Australia in some way, in some shape or form. So just for everybody who's listening, where can they find you online?
Yeah, they can find me at my website, which is drloisfrankel.com, and that's drloisfrankel.com. They can also find me on LinkedIn, and I often encourage, and that's also Dr. Lois Frankel, and I encourage them to find me on LinkedIn because I post interesting articles, coaching tips. You know, sometimes I just give my opinion on something, but, you know, it's a good way for us to stay in touch.
No, I love your posts. I really enjoy those ones that you were doing about telling people to go to hell so they enjoy the trip. I really got a kick out of those.
Yes. Yeah, all those little video clips. Those little video clips are on YouTube. I think, you know, I'm so bad at technology. I think it is. There's like a Dr. Lois Frankel YouTube page, and I think they're on the Dr. Lois Frankel YouTube page.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay. All right, well, it's been lovely to talk to you, and I'm Bev Ryan. You can find me at smartwomenpublish.com. So bye, Lois.
Bye-bye, Bev. Take care.
You want to stop recording?
Yeah.